3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in the Student of the Game studios, we finally have a full house once again. Chris Rankin back, still working on finding a way to fight against fires to make the world safer for democracy, but still touring people through magic, but most importantly, talking about football. And you know him, love him, much more simple this way. Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
The three, the triumvirate, back again. And what else? Kyle has the replay button on the theme, so that'll happen too. But nonetheless, we're still going to bring you football talk just the way you like it here on the National Gridiron Network. Good times all the way around. Don't forget to check out the website, ngscsports.com. You can check out all the stuff we have going on there. And very soon, you may be able to hear us live on that platform. That's right. Our website's a platform now, too. I don't know. Apparently, if you do certain things right, websites become platforms. It just... It sounds fancier, right? I mean, I don't know. Whatever. Fine. So, we're going to get right into it. No silliness either, although I could make a lot of fun of Weasel for leaving in LeSean McCoy on his bye and leaving out Shane Vereen in his fantasy game. Well, you know, I think it's funny that Caitlin, the fiance of our singer on The Real Man of Awesome on the NGSE Sports YouTube channel, I get a text from her. Weasel didn't put in Shady. I'm like, oh boy.
I think her team has, I think, like 150 points. So,
well, you were
it maybe wouldn't
her.
Help, but
or did you or
what's that?
Did you play against her?
Yeah.
So well,
I think she's got like 150 points. So that's pretty good.
You probably would have lost to her anyways, what you're trying to say.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, hey, if you're going to screw up, you picked a good week to do it. I like that.
Yeah,
logic.
I had 150 points too, about, and I left him on the bench also.
Wow. So, we'll leave it at that. Because fantasy success is what we do here at times on the Student of the Game. But, like I said, let's go ahead and get right into it. I had my fun taking jabs at Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
So... I didn't know if you were going to do it or not. I left it open just to see. But Jets, Pats on the Thursday night game. One could argue we had two solid Thursday night contests in a row worth watching. Chris, walk us through it a bit.
Yeah, the Jets dominated time of possession, 41 minutes to 19 for the Pats, but couldn't put the ball in the end zone early in the game. And Nick Folk's 58-yard field goal attempt was blocked at the end of regulation, and the Patriots hold on to the 27-25 win.
See, I want to make the joke about not being able to put the ball in the end zone. There's drugs for that, but this is a family show. Anyways.
Patriots got on the board first by a blown coverage by the Jets as running back Shane Vereen got behind the secondary and hauled in a 49-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
It was a good catch for a receiver, yet alone a running back, kind of catch.
And in the press conference, even Tom Brady's all, you know, oh, I totally overthrew him. Oh, wait, he totally caught it. You know, so... Yeah, I mean, give credit where it's due. Shane Vereen made the play.
Yeah, Shane Vereen had 11 carries for 43 yards, but he had 5 catches for 71 yards with 2 touchdowns that long of the 49.
Hence the 40 points in fantasy.
Well, 27, yes.
Whatever.
All right. But the Jets did move down the ball down the field early, but stalled out at the Patriots' 13-yard line, settled for a field goal, and then they had another first-half red zone drive that stalled out, settled for a field goal. So, I mean, you score one of those touchdowns, I mean, that could be a points difference in the game there.
Yeah, I mean, we often hit red zone percentage as an important part of games here on the Student of the Game on a regular basis. So, yeah, I mean, it matters. What do you want me to tell you? Yeah.
Right. And then after the Jets gave up that first touchdown drive that was only 4 plays long, they forced the Patriots 2 straight 3-and-outs, and they forced the Patriots on the day to have 5 3-and-outs. The Jets only 1 3-and-out.
So that's a lot more. Okay, so here's what's funny about that. So you drop the stat of all the time of possession and things like that. Shane Vereen getting behind the defense, that's a single play. That actually prevented more time of possession, yet may have given the Jets more time to work. I don't know. I'm trying to get into too many physics there, I guess. But, I mean, I guess big plays in the end were the difference in the game.
little bit. It was more of the Jets not putting the ball away when they had the chance, when the Patriots only had 11 first-half snaps in Jets territory, while the Jets had 33 snaps in the Patriots territory.
Oh, that would have a lot more to do with it. Yes, that's a lot more ball movement, and yet they couldn't put in the ends. I need to... I'm not even trying to do the innuendo here. It just kind of happens.
But, I mean, the turning point in the game is with 29 seconds left in the half. The Patriots were faced with a 3rd and 10, and the Jets got called with a pass interference with 29 seconds left on their own 12-yard line. Pass interference was initiated by Edelman. I hate when the refs throw this. When the receiver's putting his hand out, initiates pass interference. It should not be defensive pass interference. The defender played the ball well. The ball was a little overthrown. If Edelman wasn't putting his hand out, he would have caught the ball. But they call pass interference, and the Patriots kicked the field goal to go up 17-12 at half.
Yeah, well, let's elaborate on that a touch. It's not necessarily, I mean, you know, because Jets support and all that, fine. Me personally, I think the player, no matter if it's the corner, the DB, or if it's the defense versus the offense, I don't care who it is. Whoever initiates the contact is basically asking for more contact to be had on that play. And, you know, then the envelope's kind of pushed. You know, oh, well, you armbarred me, so why? But, you know, that's the thing about being an official, is I guess you have to see it all. And we know that NFL officials definitely very much struggle at that. Because $48,000 a year raise 2 years ago, per official. Yeah, I'm still bitter. Anyway.
Yeah, well, the second half, Jets took the opening drive 80 yards behind Geno Smith and Chris Ivory to go up 19-17 on a Chris Ivory 1 yard touchdown run. Chris Ivory had 21 carries for 107 yards, a 5.1 average with a touchdown. Geno Smith, 20 for 34, 59%, 226 yards with a touchdown. Tom Brady was 20 for 37, 54%, 261 yards with 3 touchdowns.
So, I mean, basically when it comes right down to it, the Jets could have, arguably should have, won this game. Right?
Yes, they did. I mean, they had all the chances, everything going their way. It's just the settling for the field goals is what cost them. Early on, when they could, when the two drives had stalled out, if they would have put those in, for at least one of those for touchdowns, it would have been to change the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and well, you know, the way that when you end a game with an opportunity to win and you let the field goal attempt get blocked, I don't care if it was a 58-yarder or not, that's just humiliation. I don't know who you are. To allow a man to do that to you on special teams if you're on the line, but you are less of a man now. Congratulations.
Right. I mean, even the Jets, they scored late in the game. There's 2:31 left in the game. They're down 27-25. They went for two. Didn't make the two. Went for the onside kick. Didn't recover it with 2:31 left in the game, and they still forced the Patriots to another 3-and-out to get the ball back to even have that chance.
So you're doing all this campaigning and everything the Jets did right, except for the final score.
Right.
There's obviously going to be a lot of talk about Sexy Rexy Ryan, the head coach, and whether or not he should keep his job going into the next season. Do you think he deserves to be fired? And do you think he will be fired? Notice how those are two different questions.
The way the NFL is what you do for me now, not what have you done for me. Mm-hmm. We already said he's on the hot seat this year. He probably will get fired, but everyone says, you know, he's a player's coach. They all love playing for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the locker room. They just added Percy Harvin on Friday from the Seahawks.
Well, that was
going to
be the next question, yeah.
Right. So you can see what he does with Percy Harvin trying to get a little more speed there on the offense. I mean, they have Chris Johnson, which they're not utilizing his speed because, I mean, the running plays they're doing with him are more geared towards the way Chris Ivory is as a running back. That's why Chris Ivory's done so well. Chris Johnson, you just need to get him in the flat, like a CJ Spiller, but then again, I mean, he is getting close to 30 years old now too. So, I mean, he's getting up there in age.
Yeah, and I mean, that was part of the concern with the Jets getting him in the first place was his age. I don't know. Let me pop quiz you real quick, Weasel. Let me get you in here. There's been talks that Jim Harbaugh, no matter what happens with the 49ers, even if they win the Super Bowl, won't be the coach next year. And there's also a lot of talk that Rex Ryan will also be fired at the end of the year as well. Which coach gets the next job first?
I would say definitely Harbaugh from the 49ers because, I mean, the guy brought that team to, you know, I mean, relevance a lot because you got the defense, and they have had some injuries and such. Kaepernick, Gore, they have a good core. And early on, he was tough, but he was like a player's coach. The guy played in the NFL.
That's correct.
But I think I've said it a couple weeks ago, but I just compare it to Coughlin. Tom Coughlin leaving the Jags. And one thing that the Jags say is, you know, like a general manager or whatever, said their biggest mistake was not re-signing Coughlin.
I don't think you'll ever get Trent Baalke to actually admit that for the 49ers.
They fired him. They didn't re-sign him. They fired him.
Right.
Yeah, they fired him.
Well, he's
yes,
gone,
that
yeah.
was the biggest mistake, is firing him off for like one bad season.
Right, whereas I think in Harbaugh's case, they're just going to kind of let it expire. You know, I mean, yeah. And what I find interesting is if you look at Rex Ryan's resume, it's more or less Harbaugh's resume, but with
playoffs.
Well, no, Rex Ryan. Remember, Rex Ryan took freaking
early
Mark
on.
Sanchez
that's
to
true.
AFC Championship games. You can't just sneeze on that. He beat Bill Belichick. And remember, Bill Belichick is savvy, right?
Yeah.
Because South Park references. No, but.
But that was from behind a strong running game with Thomas Jones.
Correct.
And Sean Green.
Right, because the 49ers have had nothing that relates to a strong
running
game.
Right, no, I'm just saying. That is not Mark Sanchez. It's the strong running game, the Jets.
And the defense.
The defense was good, but the first year that they went to the AFC Championship is they led the league with rushing.
So basically what you're saying is Rex Ryan at that time did more with less than Jim Harbaugh did.
Right.
See why this is a compelling question? I'm just saying. Anyways, enough of that about that compelling crap. Let's start talking about Percy Harvin, that whole thing on Friday. WTF, said many people when the news was announced that Percy Harvin is now a Jet. Granted, one night too late for it to actually matter for the New York Jets, though I don't think it would have in this game, personally. But the Jets get Percy Harvin. It's going to be for a draft pick. Undisclosed at this time. Probably a mid-level pick, depending on how things go with how much production he gets, yada, yada, yada. Questions are these, gentlemen. Will it matter? And why on earth? First of all, let's go with the football question first. I mean, Percy Harvin getting plugged into the Jets offense. I don't know. I think it's because he's a difficult piece to really know what to do with. I mean, granted, they could probably stand to take the ball out of Geno's hands a little bit, make darn sure he's throwing fewer than 30 times a game, and having Percy Harvin around doing that, good way to do it. I mean, I know a screen pass still counts as a touch for Geno, but, right. I don't know. Weasel, I'll go to you first on this. Percy Harvin is somebody who's going to improve the Jets.
Oh, definitely improve the Jets. He's the kind of player where, yeah, you get a screen pass, you get him slanting down the middle, and just plays like that, which will give you, you know, maybe a couple yards after the catch type
of
thing.
Keep the defense honest, most importantly, throughout the game.
But right? He's the kind of player that out in the open, he's, you know, he's dangerous. He could catch the long passes. In Seattle, he was not very happy with not being so involved with the deeper passes in the league. So, I think it's just having him and if Chris Johnson, if you can get those two guys on both sides or something, and people are going to have to pick their poison because Johnson still has the speed, but Harbin does have that, you know, game breaking kind of ability.
Capacity, yeah. Well, and then, you know, you're talking about taking attention away. I think Eric Decker is going to be a happy dude too.
Yeah,
because that's going to open him up a little bit too. I mean, hell, you know.
Because he's not really a number one wide receiver.
Oh!
Getting paid like one, though.
Chris, Jets, Parvin, what do you think?
Yeah, it'll work out because, really, the Jets haven't had a kick returner since Leon Washington. That was like, what, six, 7 years ago, 8 years ago?
Well, I mean, it was back in the AFC championship days there.
Right. So, I mean, they haven't had one. And actually, I just went on their Jets depth chart right now, and they have Percy Harvin listed as number one kick returner. So, already.
I mean, why wouldn't you?
Right. So, that aspect right there. But also, yeah, that I think they're going to still use Harvin as the same way the Seahawks did with those little short patterns, sweeps. Get him the ball quickly so he can see what he can do with it. They're going to have Jason Morrow, their tight end, rookie tight end, and or Jeff Kumerlin out there blocking for him.
Yeah, I like Jeff Kumerlin.
So he can get the ball to him, and they have a big blocker in front of him. Downfield threat, yeah, you could use him, but I don't think they're going to try for it because Geno likes to lead the corners instead of the receivers,
As we've touched on this show before.
Right. So you want someone else faster down there to try to get him the ball, unless he's just going to take the ball and throw it. And try to see Harvin will try to run underneath it, but
maybe
otherwise,
I mean, Harvin's fast enough to do that, right?
Right. So it is a good pick that they're only getting like a mid round for him. Yeah, maybe his locker room presence maybe not good, but that Jets locker room will put him in his place early.
See, and that's I'm in a different place than you on the locker room piece. I get the business concept of it. That's a $7 million cap hit that's represented. The Jets can absorb it because they're currently about $20 million under the cap, as I understand it. And the Seahawks are going to have considerations about other big players soon being up for re-sign. But everybody remembers Santonio Holmes being a cancer to the Jets locker room, right?
Right.
How that happened and all that. What's going to have me believe that Percy Harvin's going to be any different? What presence is there to mitigate him? Because there's a lot of youth in that locker room, Weasel.
Well, I think he, needs to get the football. And just as long as, they're utilizing in the offense and, of course, maybe winning too. But the thing is it's just he's got that, short fuse that, could worry a coach. So.
Okay. So your response talking about the Jets being very appropriate was the Keyshawn Johnson defense. You want to keep him happy, give him the damn ball. Well, okay. I guess that's one approach. But, I mean, and I'm not saying you're wrong. Let me be clear. But I'd like something a little bit more money to keep that in line, and I don't know that it's there. I mean, who's the statesman in that locker room on offense? Chris Johnson? Maybe DeBrickashaw Ferguson or Nick Mangold? No, not really. I'm not seeing it either, guys. Yeah. Anyways, quickly. Well, we'll get more into it. Actually, Let's save that for later. Let's get into Bengals and Colts. Guys, I'm not going to spend much time on this game because we already spent a lot on the Jets and Percy Harvin and all that. The 27-0, you get shut out. You're in trouble. Now, granted, we already knew that the Bengals weren't going to be 100% because A.J. Green was missing this game. But, and by the way, so too in the first quarter was Vontaze Burfict taken out as well due to what they're calling a cervical strain. Yeah, that's called a neck injury, guys. Kind of a big deal, that. And we already saw what the Patriots did to the Bengals when they were missing Vontaze Burfict. Luck and the Colts did the same. Upgraded defense. Basically stymied Giovanni Bernard and gave Andy Dalton little hope to move the football. I'll leave it at that. Gentlemen, I'll put it this way. Right now, the Bengals, I mean, are they to be taken seriously as an AFC threat? They're going to lose a number of games because they're without Harvin and or check that. Green and Burfict at this point. I mean, is their season basically over? Can they hope to overcome that?
No, because Green might be back this week, so that'll help their offense. And then a lot of times their defense feeds off for their offense. If their offense put up some points,
they are playing the Ravens this week, so that's also a big game,
right? So it might take another week later for them to maybe get back in swing of things. But I mean, they'll get back once AJ Green comes back. they'll start putting up some points. They'll start winning some games.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, we mentioned the Ravens. Guess what? They played the Falcons and crushed the Falcons. Rightfully, you know, rightfully as expected, at least by some of us in the room, because of the fact that they have an offensive line that has more injuries than a MASH unit. Yes, if that sounds familiar, that's exactly how I wrote it in my Matchup Mania article. You can see on ngscsports.com. But when it comes to it, look, you can't stop. If you have a depleted line against Haloti Ngata and Terrell Suggs, just mark it as a loss, period. Now, while I don't take the Ravens seriously at 4-2 with their current record, they're playing the Bengals next week. I'm not going to give too much of a spoiler alert there, but that concept versus the Ravens makes for an interesting matchup. Matter of fact, I'll stall because I'm still really not sure how I'm going to pick that game. But I mean, Weasel. I mean, should we be impressed by the Ravens?
I don't think so. It's like the North. I thought the Bengals were really going to be like, you know, the front runners for that, for the division.
Right. But and they're still in it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Most definitely. But I think they're kind of at the top with how, you know, Pittsburgh's playing and such. So, and the Browns. So. Yeah, they're up there.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Browns here in a minute. But let's go ahead and keep it in the North but change conferences. The Panthers were hosted by the Packers this week. Weasel, walk us through that a bit.
So the Packers at home, they crushed the Panthers.
Crushed!
38-17.
That's a lot.
So I think Aaron Rodgers kind of had a rough first couple games and stuff. And but it's...
How's the quote go? Relax.
Yeah.
It's amazing. A lot of guys would not get away with that, but apparently Aaron Rodgers is allowed to discount, double check his own fans. Boom. I've been waiting all day to say that. No, not really.
So the yeah, relax and you get Aaron Rodgers was 19 of 22.
That's awesome.
Efficient. 255 yards, 3 touchdowns. So I think his name's always up there, but comparing to players like, let's see, Peyton Manning and such, is he like one of the top people for the MVP so far?
I mean, he's in the discussion. I don't know that I would make him my MVP today, Chris. I mean, where do you come out on that?
With Aaron Rodgers? He's in the discussion, but I mean, with those stats, give me his completion attempts again.
It was 19 of 22.
22 attempts for Aaron Rodgers. 22.
That's not a lot.
That's low for him.
Well, but
for the Packers. I mean, they had
before we make that mistake. Weasel, do you know if we had a lot of big passes in that game?
I can get
it was only 255 yards. I mean, it's still not all that. I mean,
well, right, but if they have a lot of big touchdowns, a lot of big touchdown plays, that could, you know, kind of
Jordy Nelson had a 59-yarder. And then
just hit me with the scores.
Devontae Adams had a 21-yarder.
That's those are the two
touchdowns.
Right there,
those are the two touchdowns. That's 80 yards right there. So.
Okay, so yeah.
They had 30 rushing attempts. They had 30 rushing attempts, but I mean, Aaron Rodgers had 3, and Matt Flynn came in, so he had 3 also. So I mean, that was 6 other passes there. So I mean, it was like a 50-50 for the Packers, though.
Well, for play calling. Yeah, and I'll tell you this: the situation for the Panthers is just getting kind of grim. I mean, Weasel, I don't know what we do about it, but Cam Newton's a better quarterback than this. We've seen it. Kelvin Benjamin still got his touchdown as a rookie, but I don't know. I mean, do you have a statement for what's wrong with them? Because I don't know what's up. Granted, they're missing Greg Hardy because issues with the whole domestic violence movement and all that. He's suspended. But that changed their defense dramatically. Luke Kuechly was ejected because a ref crawled on his back and he reacted to it. There was a scuffle, and the ref was trying to pull Kuechly back. But if you saw, like, he was basically on Kuechly's back. I know for a fact, if anyone grabbed me like that, my first reaction would have been to swing my arm off and say, get off me as well. Yeah, pretty much. Now, the ref didn't take a hit or anything. Kuechly just kind of, you know, jabbed his arm upward. No one got hit or nothing, but it was like, oh, get off me. Oh, you're the ref. He had no idea it was the official based on what I saw, but here comes the flag in the air. Fine, if you want to hit him for 15 for that, I'm cool. You practically crawl on Luke Kuechly's back and then you eject him for it? I mean, come on. if you're going to crawl on his back like that, at least give him, you know, give him a free dinner or something. But I don't know.
So yeah,
buy him a drink at least, please.
They sell beer right there in the stadium. It's not even inconvenient.
Probably don't even buy one. Just ask the fan for it. He'll probably hand it down to him.
Well, as for, you know, Cam Newton and stuff, he was 17 of 31, 205 yards, one touchdown, one INT, yeah. And there was a Derek Anderson sighting. So the thing is that 38-3 was going into the fourth quarter. They were down.
Yeah.
And so you ask me, but my thought is maybe the running game can needs more help with that. But
right.
What do you see something different or?
It'll be interesting to see if D'Angelo Williams' return in the running game will actually help. They did have Jonathan Stewart back. His numbers were decent, but when you're down 38-3 in the fourth quarter, at some point you abandon the run. I'm just going to call that what it is. To me, this one's on the defense. Aaron Rodgers went spectacularly ape crap on you. They ran on you 30 times. That line should not be able to run on you 30 times. And then, oh, by the way, Rodgers only missed three passes all day, which tied what Matt Flynn did. But
right, there's another quarterback that missed. Only had three incompletions also later on.
Yeah, well, and that was Matt Flynn, exactly. Perfect. Yeah,
no, I meant three other ones. Three incompletions.
Yeah, exactly. Wait.
There's another quarterback later on that only had three incompletions too.
And that's Matt Flynn. Oh, you mean later on
later
in the show.
Later on in the show.
I thought you meant in the game. Yeah, anyways, yeah. Well, let's go later on in the show talking about the Dolphins and the Bears. Yeah, I don't. Chris, this is your game, right?
Yes, sir.
Take it.
Ryan Tannehill was more efficient than Jay Cutler as he led the Dolphins to a 27-14 win over the Chicago Bears. Tannehill was 25 for 32, 78%. 277 yards with two touchdowns. Jay Cutler was 21 for 34, 62%, 190 yards with a touchdown, an interception, and a fumble. Dolphins also were more efficient in the ground game and had 137 rushing yards as a team versus the 52 for the Bears. Lamar Miller had 18 carries for 61 yards, 3.4 a carry with a touchdown. Matt Forte was the only offense for the Bears. He had 12 rushes for 49 yards, 4.1 a carry with a touchdown. He also had 6 receptions for 60 yards and a touchdown. For the Dolphins, Charles Clay had 4 for 58 with a touchdown. Mike Wallace had 5 for 46 with a touchdown as well. And then also the total domination in the game for the Dolphins as they left points on the board, going 3 for 6 in the red zone.
I was hoping you'd mention that.
Time of possession was 37 minutes to 22 and a half minutes, and turnovers, none for the Dolphins and 3 for the Bears.
Two of them involving Cameron Wick, I believe. Right. Forced fumbles, right?
Yes. Yes, he had...
he recovered one of them, I know that.
Right. Yeah, one of them was a sack fumble, and then I didn't mark down the other one. But Mark Trestman for the Bears. Think he should be on the hot seat for this? How they've been...
Look, I get that Trestman looks like a Disney villain, but hell no! Look, the only reason why the Bears have lost any of their games, and any of you can correct me if you feel like I'm wrong, and I apologize in advance to friend of the show, G.W. Graw, also known as G. Stelio, a.k.a. the Heartthrob, hashtag Heartthrob on Twitter. I even feel lesser of a man having announced him like that now. I have to go make fun of him. Anyways, that all being said, another thing I will make fun of him about is the fact he worships Jay Cutler. Look, Jay Cutler is the reason why these past three games were lost. Weasel, apologize to Amanda's mom in advance for me. But he's the problem in this stretch. He's slumping. I have no idea why. He's got three fantastic targets that are huge. Huge! Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett. Matt Forte is doing a decent job in support on the ground. And his O-line, for the first time in a long time, is reliably protecting him. There's only one thing left on that offense I haven't mentioned, and it's not the kicker or the water boy. Weasel.
That actually was pretty much a quote from Brandon Marshall. No, seriously, he said that he listed the players. It was Matt Forte, Bennett.
Oh, he listed the aspects
of
the game.
Yeah, he said all these guys. He didn't mention Jay Cutler, but...
Well, why is that, you think?
But the thing is later on, I think they, of course, the question is, so you're blaming Jay. Of course, he's saying no, no. So
yeah, what's he going to do? Say, it's totally that mother bleep's fault. It's all bleep him. Bleep him.
But
it, see, I think it goes back on trust me a little bit, though, too. With only giving Matt Forte 12 carries. I mean, he averaged 4.1 yards a carry. You're only giving him the ball 12 times. Granted, yeah, he had 6 receptions, too. That's 18. You need to get him more involved in the offense, which will open up the passing lanes for Jay Cutler, so he doesn't have to try forcing the ball in.
Did
either of his receivers. He did have some of it. Brandon Marshall's been with an injury. Alshon Jeffery's been out in and out in the last couple games, too, right, with an injury as well.
Right.
But you need to feed Matt Forte, who's been usually like 60 to 70% of their offense.
Yeah.
When he was like 80% of their offense this game.
Yeah. I mean, that's legit. I mean, Forte has a touchdown in this game, correct?
He had 2 touchdowns. He had a receiving touchdown and a rushing touchdown.
Okay, so he was being utilized. Granted, maybe not to just straight up hand the ball off. And I'm saying all that to say this. The Dolphins' defensive front is their strength. And as we saw when Rodgers brought them back in the second half last week, the Dolphins' weakness is their secondary. So for Tressman to test the weaker part of the defense in front of him rather than challenge one of the best defensive ends in the game right now in Cameron Wake, I can't completely fault him for asking his quarterback, who has $30-plus million in guaranteed money, might be closer to 40, I don't remember off the bat, to do his bleeping job. I'm not going to get on Hades from Hercules, the Disney movie, for that. I mean, I'm sorry, Mark Trestman, for doing that. That'd be funny. Somebody work on getting me a damn Photoshop with him having that blue flame hair. Y'all know what I'm talking about. But look, Chris, we've said it before about other teams and other situations. We touched on it with the Seahawks and the loss to the Cowboys about not running the football enough and not using your strength enough. In this case, I think taking it towards the Dolphins' defensive line is a mistake because it's the one thing they can control. Please note the sack fumbles by Cameron Wake. I don't know. But then again, you should try to keep him honest. I don't feel like the Bears were failing to move the ball. I feel like they were making key mistakes.
Yeah, they were. But, I mean, when you only have 12 carries, 4.1 average, yeah, he had a long of 16. So he still averaged 3 yards a carry.
Right.
Which is first down, 4 carries, 12 yards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, it's you just need to get him going. Yeah, he did break off that 16-yarder. That's Matt Forte. You know, he'll give you it's 3-4 here, 3-4 here, break off a 1.
But yeah, you're right. He'll break off a big one every now and again. In terms of looking at the numbers on the sheet, you're right. In terms of what I saw happening in the game that day, I don't think it was far-fetched to expect Cutler to do something. But who knows? Maybe that would have kept him from making mistakes. Weasel, wrap it up.
Whenever there is a running back, especially, you know, a star running back, like maybe top 5, that he gets so few carries. Usually what I look at, of course, is, you know, the quarterbacks, how many attempts he has, right, but also the scoreboard. And
scoreboard
up through the third quarter.
Wait. You look at the scoreboard involving the outcome of a game? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Well,
the team that scores the most points wins.
Thanks, John.
Pretty much what you got is that in the first three quarters,
right,
the largest that the Bears were down was 14 points.
That's
so
correct.
It's like...
out of hand, yeah.
When you got the field goal early in the fourth quarter to put them up 24-7, that's still, you know, 17 points. I mean, there wasn't a good reason why not to, you know, use it more.
It's like I said to Chris earlier, and I'll say it one more time. In terms of looking at the stat sheet and the numbers, and even as you said it, I'll even agree with you. On the scoreboard, looking at that, the game was not out of hand. The run was still an option. You're both correct to that extent. And who knows, maybe if they did that, again, maybe Cutler would not have been sack fumbled. I don't know. That's a legitimate point. .. But again, it's not that the Bears weren't moving the football. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how Trestman's next interview goes when they bring this game up. Anyways, we're a little bit behind the break. Let's go ahead and knock that down real quick. You're listening to the National Actually, let me find the commercial here. National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game, week by week, to the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGN, football talk, just the way you like.
And we're back here on The Student of the Game, bringing you football talk just the way you like it. And guys, we're going to bring this up real quick just because we have to. The Cardinals played the Raiders this week, and the Cardinals won in dominating fashion. They dominated the Raiders much better than I can speak, 24-13. You know, with all the loss that the Cardinals have on their roster, they're still defensively intimidating and all that. Carson Palmer, I'm going to maintain, is a quarterback whose entire career may involve no trophies, no awards, nothing like that, but should be noted as a constant overcoming of adversity, okay? He got the Bengals to the playoffs when they were still the Bungles, before there wasn't Andy Dalton, all that other stuff, and then gets hurt basically the first play of the game that he attempts, crushing basically his legacy there in Cincinnati thereafter. Okay, then he's basically left for dead, gets kicked out for Andy Dalton, which was the right move for the Bengals, don't get me wrong, gets shoved over to the Raiders, where he's replaces Kyle, I should have been a bowler, in 2 weeks, 2 weeks of practice, he comes in, brings the Raiders to 8-8, and is one game short of making the playoffs, and fails to make the playoffs due to Tebow mania in his division. He gets cut from there, ends up in Arizona as a stopgap, and now is in a position to possibly win the NFC West. Keep in mind, last year, gentlemen, the Cardinals won 10 games and were forced out of the playoffs because reasons. I can go on and on and on about that. Carson Palmer is probably the single most underappreciated quarterback in this game, and the fact this game was played is more or less pretty boring. Look, I can give you Carson Palmer's stats if you really want them, but I really think that this game's in place for me to have a rant about the fact that Carson Palmer is probably the most underappreciated quarterback in the league at current. Anyone want to disagree with me?
Hey, good.
You're good.
Hey, did you see that Darnell Dockett sign that he made on the sideline? Darnell Dockett's out for the season.
Yes.
He drew on a whiteboard after the Jags won, since the Jags was the early game.
Mm-hmm.
But worst team in the NFL, 0-6, because towards the Raiders fans.
Nice. Well, I guess now they're 0-7. Anyways, you got to love Darnell Dockett. I mean, he's a personality. I've heard him in interviews all the time. And anyways, yeah, this game wasn't even really that impressive. We won't mess with it. Speaking of games that were unimpressive, but we're going to talk about because reasons, the Browns went in Jacksonville to face the Jags. Who's got it?
Yeah. Well, we've been saying the last few weeks, you know, the Browns have been looking pretty good. They've been playing well. And then usually,
I might have even used the word impressed last
week. Right. Well, in a, usually you play up to your competition, which I don't think the Jags played up to their competition here. I think the Browns played down to their competition, as this was a turnover-ridden game. And the Jags are winless no more, as they beat the Browns 24-6. Each team had 3 turnovers in the game.
Yeah.
Blake Bortles had 3 interceptions.
Oh, there's your 3 turnovers.
Two of them in the first half. One of them led to a field goal by the Browns. But he did manage a drive right before half when he connected with fellow rookie Allen Robinson for a 31 touchdown to take a 7-6 halftime lead. Allen Robinson had 4 catches for 60 yards with that touchdown. The third interception for Bortles was in the red zone late in the game off a stupid pass I've seen so many times.
And they say he's similar to Roethlisberger, so throwing interceptions in the red zone, hey, all right.
Yeah, it was a it's one of the things that he could have ran the 5 yards for a first down, but he tried.
You know, I didn't think of that
until
you just said it. That's a good point.
So yeah. it was a stupid turnover.
Is there such a thing as a smart turnover?
Well,
I'm just asking. Hey.
Well, you can call those safeties kicking the ball out of the end zone safety type smart turnovers type points, whatever.
Anyway.
But the Browns, their three turnovers all were in the second half. All of them led to 17 Jacksonville points. Hoyer lost the fumble in his own end zone, in his own end that led to a Scooby 30-yard field goal. Some reason, the Browns returner, Jordan Poyer, decided to try to receive a punt inside his own 5-yard line.
It was inside his own 3, if I remember correctly.
Right, and he muffed it, and the Jags recovered. And then the very next play, Denard Robinson had an 8-yard touchdown run, which he had 22 carries for 127 yards on the game.
Well, hey, at least one former college quarterback did something good for the Jags.
Bing! And then the very next series, Hoyer tried throwing the running back Ben Tate, which went off his hands into a Jags defender. And then we had a Storm Johnson second touchdown run for the season.
So the running game becoming dominant still in Jacksonville. Guys, interesting note. The past 3 games, what team has given up 1 defensive touchdown?
Could it be the Jags?
It is the Jags! Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
You did that. See, I did that just so you would answer the question correctly, and I could do Weasel Weez again.
Woot.
Wait, I'm the host of the show. I can do whatever I want. Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
That's awesome. If you guys don't have that for your ringtone yet, you're doing it wrong.
Well, so the Browns were 0-for-3 on fourth down, and then they were 0-for-2 in the red zone to the Jags, 2-for-5. Only bright part for the Browns on the day was they found a receiver, Andrew Hawkins. He had 5 catches for 112 yards.
Andrew Hawkins, the former Bengal, if I remember correctly. Look, Browns fans here, let me help you with one word. I'm going to pull an Aaron Rodgers on you. Relax. It's okay. You still have a chance. You're saying there's a chance.
And the Jags have no chance at all.
Well.
Especially they had their linebacker, Pozlosny, he's out with a torn pectoral for season.
Yeah, that's not good.
And their defensive end, Andre Branch, is out with a groin injury for the next 6 weeks.
That's
so,
also ungood. But
so
anyway.
The Jags defense has been kind of a point for them, as you mentioned, the last 2 games. Haven't got a defense touchdown. It's going to take a blow here lately.
There you go. Moving on, matches where defense was an issue, certainly one here. I should say factor, not issue, because both sides play pretty good defense, you could argue. But Cowboys, or Giants-Cowboys, Chris.
Ever since the Cowboys took the play calling away from head coach Jason Garrett this year, the Cowboys have been a balanced offensive team. DeMarco Murray has rushed for his 7th straight 100-yard game and broke Jim Brown's 56-year record for most 100-yard games to start the season.
Wow. It's hard for me to take DeMarco Murray that seriously. I can't do it because I know it's mostly that offensive line, not him. But I'll grant, people are saying, well, DeMarco Murray knows what he is. He's a downhill runner and he needs a lane. Okay, that's fine. It's the whole Jim Brown and DeMarco Murray in the same sentence thing. I can't get over that. I'm sorry. It's just unnatural.
I mean, DeMarco Murray's had some nice runs. The only thing is what his injuries have plagued him throughout his career.
Well, yeah.
And they said there's an average of he averages missing 3.8 games a season or something like that. So, like, 4 games a season he averaged missing.
And an average running back usually misses 1 or 2 per season anyway.
Right. And he broke off a long run during the game and turned his ankles. That had to leave the game early. But, I mean, he came back. He finished with 28 carries for 128 yards. 4.6 a carry with a touchdown.
And I saw going into this game that his pace was higher than that of Larry Johnson. If you don't remember him, he was a Chief out of Penn State who carried the ball like 424 times, something stupid in one season, and was never the same again. A, because of the wear and tear. B, he also lost 2 Hall of Fame caliber offensive linemen in Willie Rofe and Willie Shields. By the way, I hope to be present when I believe it's Willie Shields that's not in yet, when he does get inducted. Yes, he was that good. Boom.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Cowboys, this is their 6th straight win, and we're all surprised how they're playing well. We didn't think they were going to do this well. How many injuries they had on defense to start the season off. Tony Romo's back surgery, I guess. Maybe they replaced his whole back because, I mean, he's been playing pretty well. I mean, 17 for 23, 74%, 279 yards, 3 touchdowns. The 1 INT he threw is because Dez Bryant fell down.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think what this shows me is at that point, at one point in this game, the Giants were up 14-0. Based on
14-7. 14-7. No, Cowboys scored the first touchdown. Giants scored
the
next two.
You're right, they did answer back. Okay. Right. But, I mean, 14-7, look, the Giants were very much in this game. And to come back and take, granted, it's not a blowout, technically, 31-21. In my mind, it's still within two scores. But to give the Giants the help that you did and still come out two scores away in a win, that's worth something.
Right.
Me personally, I think they would have done better with Rashad Jennings. You don't think the Giants would have it would have mattered for the Giants if they had Rashad Jennings? Fine, but
no, because the Giants defense, all three of the Cowboys touchdowns were down the middle. Their secondary has been hurt a little bit. You had Gavin Escobar, their backup tight end, had 3 catches, 65 yards with 2 touchdowns. Terrence Williams had the 1 touchdown in the end zone. That's because Tony Romo had all day and yesterday to throw the ball.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, again, O-line. We've been over that.
So, I mean, yeah, granted that, but.
Do you game plan for Greg Escobar? No.
Gavin.
No, I don't even know his freaking name. Gavin Escobar. Right. Do you game plan? Hell no, you don't. You game plan for Jason Witten and or Dez Bryant. I know one of his touchdowns, the safety, was caught watching Dez Bryant a little bit more than he should have, and that just a bit was enough for Gavin Escobar to get one of his touchdowns.
Right. See, they had a game plan for Dez Bryant in the first half. Second half, not so much, is because he had over 100 yards receiving, and he only had 1 catch in the first half.
Well, look,
Dez Bryant.
You can game plan for Dez Bryant all you want. He's still a good receiver. There you go. Anyways, speaking of people who are good, no matter how much you game plan for them, Peyton Manning now marks 510 touchdowns for his career.
509.
Wait. He finished the game with 510.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but in order to break it, he did throw number 509 to Demaryius Thomas, as the 49ers were basically useless in this game, 42-17, the victory for the Mile High Marauders of Denver. But guys, let's call it what it is. Actually, Weasel, what else you got?
I was just going to say that Brett Favre, I think he sent like a text, you know, saying, you know, good job type of thing.
Was it a multimedia message?
And the thing about it was that he didn't say it, but I'm betting thinking, at least I have the interception record.
And in about another 14 or 15 seasons, maybe Peyton will break that too.
Eli's coming close on that one too.
Oh!
Got the brother with the okay.
I have a feeling that Peyton's going to use that at the dinner table in November on Thanksgiving. I'm just throwing that out there. Say, congratulations there, big brother, on breaking the record. Hey, don't worry, Eli. You'll break a record soon enough. Just keep throwing them picks. Yeah. We really shouldn't say that. I think Eli is at least 2 weeks without a pick lately. So.
All right, and then Eli just says, hey, how many Super Bowl rings you got?
Shut up.
Your face.
How many Super Bowl rings you got? Your face. It's perfect. I like it. That's good. I mean, look. Missing Patrick Willis, missing Navarro Bowman, missing Alden Smith, missing Culliver. I want to say Chris Culliver. That's not it. But the defensive back, missing your top run-blocking offensive lineman in Mike Iupati, and losing Kilgore, your center, during the game. That's just a rough spot, no matter who you are. And the 49ers, I didn't think the 49ers would have won this game full strength, let alone trying to compete, missing that many pieces against a Hall of Fame quarterback and arguably one of the top 3 receiving corps in the league. We'll leave it at that. I don't want to get into legacy stuff with Peyton Manning, because then someone will talk about, well, he only has 1 Super Bowl, and then I'll have to throw things at people. Speaking of throwing things at people, somebody who normally doesn't get an opportunity to throw things at people did today. It did on Sunday. Weasel, what you got?
We got the Titans on the road. They lost to the Redskins 19-17. Now, that was led by the almost forgotten Colt McCoy.
Colt McCoy. Oh, he had an opportunity to throw things at people.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
You got Redskins quarterback Kirk Cousins. He was doing pretty good, you know, early on. Not so much lately.
And not so much.
That was against the Jags, by the way.
Yeah. And after going 10 of 16 for 139 yards, an interception, and a lost fumble, they said, Colt McCoy. Let's see what you can do.
Can't do any worse.
I think I've gotten some audio from that sideline that said, "Who the hell wants to play quarterback?"
Now he did start the second half, and this first pass of a couple years, literally, he had a 70-yard touchdown to Pierre Garçon.
In
so,
stereo.
The thing was, is that it was like a quick pass to the left sideline, and I think it was just ball just, you know, took it down the field. He did everything else.
Do you think he made that noise when he caught the ball?
Oh.
Catch.
But the thing is that's big was the last drive of the game. Now Washington was down 17-16 with 3:14 remaining. So McCoy put together a 10-play, 76-yard drive that ended with a 22-yard field goal by Redskins kicker Kai Forbath. Now
awesome.
If Colt McCoy does have, I think he's starting next week,
mm-hmm.
and if he keeps on winning, like he had a pretty good half, but I've heard the coaching stuff saying about RG3 is it's his job when he's healthy or something like that. But what do y'all think? Is it go with the winning hand?
Wow.
It's Colt McCoy. You gotta with the issue in Washington or situation. RG3 comes back. You need to put him in and see what he can do for you. If you can't do anything, if Colt McCoy still, if RG3 doesn't make it next week and you got Colt McCoy and he wins, you still got to go with RG3.
Agreed.
Next week.
I mean,
if RG3 doesn't do it, yeah, you still got that card of putting in McCoy, see what he could do for you. But you still got to give RG3 the chance.
If nothing else, so other teams can get a look at him and we can make the Redskins can make a move to try to ship him somewhere. Anyways, we're probably going to hit overtime this week, gentlemen. But let's go ahead and hit the next game. Vikings-Bills. Weasel.
So the Vikings on the road lost to the Bills in literally the final seconds. 17-16. Rookies were a big part of this game. You got Vikings Teddy Bridgewater, 15-26, 157. One touchdown, two INTs. He did throw 300 for his first game, and now maybe reality setting in.
And now he's thrown five interceptions in the past 2 weeks.
Got the Vikings running back, Jerick McKinnon. He's like a workout warrior. The guy is like a freak. And 19 carries, 103 yards. And you have some guy named Sammy Watkins for the Bills at wide receiver. 9 catches, 122 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, quick one. It doesn't have to be one of these guys, but offensive rookie of the year so far. Who do you got?
Sammy Watkins is trying to make a case, but you guys are going to have to work pretty hard. If I were to pick today, which we will be in 2 more weeks, but if I were to pick today right now, I don't see how you skip Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say Kelvin Benjamin.
Weasel?
Good. All right. Okay. I agree.
Yeah, because that game was, 17-16 and Sammy Watkins caught the game-winning touchdown. That's really the big news of that game.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what was impressive was that you got good old Kyle Orton. It was at the 2
Kyle
Orton. It was he drove it down to the 2-yard line literally with 4 seconds left,
mm-hmm.
and he threw that touchdown pass to that Sammy Watkins on the left side,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty gutsy. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I believe there was a 4th-and-20 also in that drive as well, caught by the tight end Scott Chandler leading up to it. So yep. You got to give Orton credit as much as it just doesn't make sense to me that he's playing right now.
Injuries.
Well, no, EJ Manuel wasn't injured. But we don't have time to get into that. Right. I still don't understand that move completely, but I guess it's kind of working. Chiefs, Chargers. I found it interesting when the Chargers barely beat the Raiders. I'm sorry. 31-28, excuse me. I thought they might actually get a wake-up call and step their game up and beat the Chiefs. Not so much. 23-20, the score. The Chiefs roll with the victory. Something we don't normally see is Alex Smith breaking 200 yards. I'm kidding. 19 for 28, 221 with a touchdown is a normal performance for Alex Smith. The standout here for me, Jamal Charles actually lasting an entire game. 22 carries, 95 yards with a touchdown. Hasn't really had that kind of a performance since that Monday night beatdown of the Patriots a few weeks back. Guys, do we have any reason to believe that the Chiefs are an actual threat in the AFC West to win the division? Not playoffs, but to win the division.
I'd say Jamal Charles, got to keep him healthy.
No, I don't think so to win the division because they still got to go through Denver.
They still got to go through Denver. They still have to find their defense's full stride. And, oh, by the way, Jamaal Charles has not been staying on the field. I'm with you, Weasel. So, yeah. Excellent. Next up, Saints, Lions. I'm just bitter about this game. Okay, so, see, the Saints went to Detroit, right? And they were up and winning convincingly. And Drew Brees was going all Drew Brees on cats. And then he threw an interception. And then he threw an... Yeah, never mind. The Saints lose 23-24. More about why I'm bitter about that later. 28-45 was Drew Brees. 342 yards, 2 touchdowns. Matt Stafford, 24-40. 289 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 INTs. Keep in mind, no Calvin Johnson present for the Lions. I'm still a little surprised at how they scored 24 points, but a lot of it was set up by the interception I mentioned, giving the Lions excellent field position on the day. Though Jimmy Graham played, not really much to contribute. Kenny Sills, the tight end, had 5 catches for 103 yards and a touchdown, as Marquise Colston had 6 for 111 himself. Golden Tate stepping up in the absence of Calvin Johnson, 10 catches for 154 yards and a TD. At the end of the day, guys, I still don't feel like the Lions should have won this game, but something very huge for the NFC North race coming up. They keep limping by these games where they don't have Calvin Johnson and continue to find a way to compete in the NFC North. I'll pop quiz real quick. The Lions finish ahead of the Bears in the NFC North. True or false, Chris?
Going today, I say true.
Weasel?
The offense just hasn't clicked really for the Bears. And so I'm going to say, you know, true.
You say offense, I say defense, really, for the Bears also.
It is a little of both. There's been injuries on the defense. The offense suddenly went home out of nowhere for the past 3 weeks, yeah, thanks to Jay Cutler.
You don't have those big injuries for the offense, so.
Right. I mean, yeah, that. So, the Bears could still turn it around, but I'm afraid that I, too, will have to be naysayer on the Bears at this point. We got about 2 minutes left in the live show, so I'm going to go ahead and drop the quick departure stuff here real quick. We'll be covering the Seahawks and Rams in overtime because they need their due, and we'll also be doing the study hall then as well. But look out for the matchup mania that will be coming up on NGSCSports.com. NGSCSports.com is where you can find that and a whole lot of other quality content. For both the National Gridiron Network and the Sports Chronicles, for all sports, football, basketball, baseball. We're starting to get a little hockey up there, too. So check that out when you can. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at the SOTG. If you happen to believe that, let's say, Sammy Watkins is a rookie of the year, let me know why. Heck, why not? If you got some questions for either of my co-hosts, you can hit up Chris at Rankin the SOTG or Weasel Weeze himself on Twitter, Weasel, at Weasel, the SOTG. Fantastic stuff all the way around, but unless you're staying after for a little bit more study in class, dismissed. All right, you know, it figures we're running late. Both you two here causing trouble. I guess this is detention. Anyway, I've been waiting to make that joke. No, I haven't. Anyways, but yeah, I mean, so let's get right into it. Chris. Seahawks, Rams, go.
For two straight weeks, the Rams jumped out to an early 14-3 lead, but this
90 seconds.
This time they held on to a 28-26 win due to some special teams trickery.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just go ahead.
All right. On a Seattle punt, Tavon Austin drew the defense away from the ball to the opposite side of the field, where Stedman Bailey picked up the ball and returned it 90 yards to put the Rams up 21-3.
Beating pretty much the long snapper and the punter.
60
himself.
Seconds.
I still look at this play, and I have no idea how this crap worked. Can somebody help me, Weasel?
You have Tavon Austin. You have him at about the 5-yard line on the opposite side of where, I guess it was Bailey.
Stedman Bailey.
The way the opposite side of the field.
Right. Like, and we're talking 50 yards worth of distance between the two of them.
Well, you have the blockers. You have the Rams blockers all coming to that way.
Uh-huh.
And you have, I kind of like 7 or 8 Seattle players running towards him.
So from the perspective of the play of the punt return team, it was a, like a punt left call, and all the motion was to the left side of the field, except for Bailey and maybe one or two others.
He made a good over the like a
10 over seconds catch.
Over the shoulder,
over the shoulder catch.
So his back running towards was still the other, to the punters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he got it, and I would have to look at, you know, what maybe specifically what game, but Devin Hester, when he was with the Bears, he did the he did that same kind of thing, and I think it got, I think it was Daniel Manning was their other returner. He got, I think, a large run or a touchdown run for that. So they're not the only ones that have done this before.
The reason why it worked is because Tavon Austin is the punt returner. He was in the middle of the field.
Right.
When the ball was punted and it was going over to the left, just so happens that they called it for this. They might have tried it before. If the punter would have punted to the right, it wouldn't have worked.
Right. Or it just would have bounced out of bounds for a touchback.
Right.
Or out of the end zone, sorry.
So Tavon Austin, when he starts in the middle, he runs over to the other side. The gunner's down for the Seahawks. They're not looking up to where the ball is. They're just trying to get downfield to try to get to the returner. So they see Tavon Austin head one way. So they're following him that way.
And it's not just Tavon Austin. I think that's a point too that Weasel mentioned.
Right.
Is that
some
it's
of the Rams,
coverage.
Right? They're all going that way too. They only had a few others linger back the other way. So, I mean, that's everyone's going to where they think it is because the gunner's going down. You got your corners that are lead blockers for him coming into where Tavon Austin is. So they're all coming that way because they all think that's where the ball is. And then the punt was the other way. So that's why the punter and the long snapper, because those are the only two that look for where the ball's going. Punter knows where the ball's going because he kicked the ball.
Yeah. I see. Here's the thing. They know before they go which way the ball is going to be kicked, probably. Now, I guess they could have thought that the ball got shanked. Very possible. But what I will give credit to the Rams for, especially Tavon Austin, is this guy was so devoted to selling this fake that he even falls down in his rendition. Maybe it was on purpose. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But that's what fooled the cameraman when he fell down. He's like, huh? Oh, up there, you know. I mean, first of all, to fool the cameraman, you got to be doing something right. But I hear what you're saying, that the gunners don't pay attention. And I get the part, Weasel, where you're all like, well, everybody else was moving and it was an optical illusion and all that. But I don't know.
I'll just say that whenever a punter gets the ball, now, I don't know I don't think he talks to the his fellow players and says, hey, I'm punting to the right side, or hey,
no,
I'm going
no,
to
the
they, left.
No, they do. It's
they,
a punt left,
usually
punt right.
Call it.
Yes,
yeah.
They call it.
Okay. And I heard something about how the guy, the punter was a, he played rugby. And I think his kicking, I think it always usually goes to the right. I heard something like that, but it was just, you know, they sold it. And, 7 points on the board against the defending champs. So pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah. I mean, certainly important to the outcome. And where I'm at is I think it's a matter of we're having all this time to think and analyze. I really honestly just don't think the Seahawks on the field were paying that much attention at this point. I mean, that's an element of it, too.
So going through the motions.
Yeah, which, hey, you want to do that against an NFC West team? That's a you problem. I'm just saying. Anyways, Chris.
All right, so going into the fourth quarter, Russell Wilson would bring the Seahawks within 2 with 9:44 left in the game, and they'd go for 2. Good call.
Now, what was the score again?
It was
21-19 at the time, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, it's the right call.
Almost 10 minutes left in the game. You go for 2.
21-19.
Yeah. You go for 2 with 10 minutes left in the game?
Yeah.
I wouldn't go for 2 with...
A lot of times you go for 2 if you have to. And,
well, and
right
yeah,
now...
I know that's your stance there, too. I mean, granted, I'll be honest. I thought there was less time on the clock. But, I mean, 21-20... when your teams are really dealing with the blow of losing Percy Harvin, when you have, when you're playing against a Rams team that you're struggling to score against, I don't know.
It's, I think the problem is you get those 2 points, it looks great. You have a 21 all going into, you know, the next drive and stuff.
Right.
But because they missed it, you're looking at 21 to 19, and with about 5 minutes remaining in the game, St. Louis scores a touchdown.
Right.
And so instead of looking at, oh, we're down by 28 to 20, you're looking at a 28 to 19.
And you're down by 9.
Yeah, you're down by 2 possessions.
And that's 2 possessions when they could have easily, you know, took the 2 points later. Hindsight, usually people don't talk about it if it works, but in this instance, it didn't work.
And the 10 minutes, the fact that it is that late makes me think about it a little bit more than I did before. And I'm not going to blame Pete Carroll on this one, though, and here's why. The play call put in worked. Russell Wilson and Jermaine Kearse just failed to hook up. Okay? Kearse was open. I don't know if the ball got tipped or something, but...
In fact, well, when with the Kearse, but, I mean, if you look at... I don't know who the player was behind him. Mm-hmm. There's another player, a Seahawk player, that could have been thrown to that he was open. It was right behind Kearse. That if Kearse didn't tip the ball, it would have been a 2-point conversion.
Maybe. I mean, and I still felt like Kearse was a good target to hit anyway. I don't know. But obviously the single point a factor as well. So now we're 8 points into Seahawks mistakes, arguably, here. So, I mean, you're talking about the Rams special teams doing so good. Does that mean the Seahawks had special teams? Yay.
Yeah, short bus teams, yes.
Anyways.
Well, the Seahawks, after the Rams scored a touchdown and go up by 9, the Seahawks came right back on a Doug Baldwin 9-yard touchdown catch with 3:18 left. Doug Baldwin had 7 catches for 123 yards with that touchdown. So he's benefiting without Percy Harvin here. It's the best game, I think, of his career.
Or at least his stats are.
Right. Russell Wilson was 23 for 36 on the day, 64%, 313 yards with 2 touchdowns. He also had 106 rushing yards with a rushing touchdown.
You know, since you chose to bring up his stats now, I'm going to go on this speech now. That's an amazing game by Russell Wilson. I feel like I've said many times that Russell Wilson is not the kind of guy that can carry a football team. He's just not. However, looking at this game is one hell of a bit of evidence against me. Now, I'll grant, okay, fine. The Rams had 1 sack going into this game. The defensive line is not all that in a bag of chips. Blah, blah, blah. The Rams not as good as everybody thinks. Yada, yada, yada. Third string quarterback Tavon Austin. Blah, 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 blah. Whatever. But in the face of true adversity, Marshawn Lynch was slowed. What do you have? It was
he had 18 for 53.
Okay. Not a great day.
No. So the Rams keyed Marshawn Lynch on this. They're saying, we're not going to let him beat us.
But it's happened before. See the Cowboys. Russell Wilson, I dare you to win the game. And he does his own Tony Romo impression against the Cowboys.
Right.
Which, by the way, not enough people are making that joke. Get on that, NFL public. But that's right. I said it. What? So, but Russell Wilson was asked to win this game. He did his job. Now, because the Seahawks had short bus teams instead of special teams, certainly has a lot to do with it. But anyways, you were continuing on.
But, I mean, with the Rams, their quarterback, their third string, Austin Davis, he was 18 for 21.
Yeah. No,
so,
he only did his damn job.
He had 3 incompletions. Sure. So, I mean, 152 yards with 2 touchdowns.
And the great Richard Sherman wants to talk schmack when he makes 1 pass defended. Get off me.
Yeah. So, with that Seahawks touchdown, you know, go down, or they're down by 2 now, 28-26.
Right.
Because they kicked the extra point.
Right.
3:18 left in the game. Would you try the onside kick or would you kick it deep?
Definitely kick it deep.
All right. So Seahawks did that. Did force a 3-and-out, but on a 4th and 3 on their own 18, the Rams fake punt pass.
Okay, wait a minute.
It's awesome.
First of all, yes, that was awesome. I literally dropped my jaw and tried to pick it back up. Like, I went, oh. Just sitting there with my mouth wide open in the middle of the restaurant. Blake had left by then. I'm sitting at this table by myself. I tried to put my jaw back. It would not. I was just sitting there. You know, I have to make that sound because, you know, you can't just see that my mouth is open. This is radio, not TV. But
I think a way you look at it is that. So who's the guy that's whenever you're lined up between the line for in the snap between the punter, you have the two guys in, is it flanks or who do you call the guys that are in between that, you know, picks up extra guys?
Oh, they basically line up in the backfield.
They're flanks.
Yeah,
they're flanks.
The one right on the left.
Benny Cunningham.
Cunningham, yeah. I think it must have been like, you know, by repetition that, because that's a really gutsy call, especially when you're up by two. But, yeah, he just broke off and nobody followed
him. He runs forward, then zips outside. Keep in mind, Ryan Hecker, I believe is his name, the punter, a two-time state champion high school quarterback, apparently got this pass right as well.
Yeah, he's 5 for 6 for 60 yards in his career.
Yeah. Epic.
Yeah, but that play was like, I mean, that's
it
guts.
Blew my mind.
Because he could have dropped that, or he's like, I better not drop this.
And that punter had some zip on the ball, too. Yeah. It wasn't a little floater or whatever. He had some zip on that ball.
I mean, let's put it this way. You've already exposed that the Seahawks special teams over pursues. Why the hell not take advantage of it? I get that.
Well, on this one, it looked like they were going back to block for the return. It didn't look like there was even a pressure on the punter at all.
Okay, so they overcommitted to blocking.
Right. So, I mean, with that completion, got the Rams' new set of downs. A few plays later, they're faced with a 3rd and 1 when rookie running back Trey Mason rushes for 9 yards, loses the ball. Seahawks think they have it, and the play was not reviewed.
Because
they called
it
was
down by
contact.
Was
marked down by contact.
Right. I can see why Seattle Seahawks and Seattle Seahawks fans would be ticked by this call. But
still, even if they said that it was a fumble and they went to go review, see who had the ball, when there's a scrum, it's whoever comes up with the ball is whoever they see. They can't see in the bottom of the pile. There was no evidence that showed. Everyone's like, oh, Richard Sherman had the ball. No, he did not. He was on top of the ball. The ball was between his legs. He never had possession of the ball in his hands.
Much like the first Ram to touch it before the scrum, never had full control of it either.
Right. So it's whoever comes up with the ball. So even if they reviewed it, say, yes, it was a fumble, they go back and see who had it. A Rams player came out of the pile with the ball. So it'd still be the Rams ball regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And everyone doesn't see it. They're like, oh, Richard Sherman, this and that. And it's,
well, hey, here's another factor here, by the way. Maybe the fact too many people aren't crying foul about this, all because of a very special call that happened a couple years ago that went in the Seahawks' favor. It's the Immaculate Reception's revenge, if you don't like it. I'm just saying. Throwing that out there. I think it's worth mentioning. I think you're right overall, Chris. I mean, if no one had a clear possession, due to the fact that, you know, human vision can't see through bodies, you got to go with whoever comes out of the pile with it at some point.
The thing was that when the Rams guy jumped on it, I think they were saying after he, like, kind of grabbed the ball, I think they were calling it right there that, oh,
he had
possession, and that's it. I don't even think the Rams guy had possession of the ball.
He did not.
He did. Yeah. No, it's clearly a blown call from that front. What Chris is saying is even if it extended, what would have happened, what would have been correct is no one ended up with clear possession of the ball before the pileup happened. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it's whoever the hell just comes out.
Right. But still, it should have came down from the one guy that all his job is to review the play and call it. It's under 2 minutes left. Call it, say, we want to look at that. No, that was, you know, we want to relook at the play. He never even called it down saying we want to review this play.
But it's not reviewable because it's a down by contact mark. That's why it never got beeped down.
But it's under 2 minutes. You can challenge.
But it's not challengeable. It was marked down by contact.
Right,
you
but can't the
coach, do that.
Coaches can, if it's over 2 minutes, coaches can
No, even if they challenge it, they'll say it's not reviewable, right? This is that whole same thing as years back. The best example I could come up with is years old, unfortunately, but it was Ravens Chargers. Okay. The ball was fumbled by Phillip Rivers on an excellent play by Ray Lewis, and the ball was called down immediately when it was actually a fumble. Couldn't review it. Why? Calls of markdown by contact aren't reviewable. Now, if he fumbled it and they let the play stand as a fumble, they can turn around and say he didn't really fumble it. The other one is not challengeable. Now, whether it should be or not is an interesting question. It gets difficult as to, well, if we mark it down by contact, but it's really not, then we're encouraging guys to play after the whistle, and it just gets to be a very dangerous situation. That's why it's there. But, yeah, you cannot challenge a down-by-contact call. That's why it was never beeped down, right? Otherwise, great question. But, you know.
So the other thing that hurt the Seahawks was 10 penalties for 89 yards.
Yeah, I had that on my paper, too.
So, to the Rams, 2 for 20. I mean, red zone, Seahawks were 3 for 5. So, they did leave some points there as the Rams were 3 for 3.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I may have been correct about that whole ruling situation with the challenge and markdown by contact and all this other stuff. But, indeed, I am still the student of the game when it comes to the study hall. You like that? Good leading, huh?
Yeah, I like it.
Chris, first pick.
All right, well, last week I was 9-5. You and Weasel were 8-6, so I still have a five-game lead, so now I'm creeping away.
I'm creeping back.
I'm creeping away.
You gotta be the voice.
Creep.
Something like that. I don't know.
First game, Thursday night, you got Chargers-Broncos. I'm going with Peyton Manning with the Broncos.
Weasel?
Broncos.
This is tough. The Chargers play up to their competition, and they've already been tried like a free sample at Kmart last week. Well, okay, not that bad, but they were beaten by the Chargers. It looks pretty ripe for the Chargers to win, which means you're asking me to put faith in Phillip Rivers. I don't care if he's doing better this year or not. I'm not doing that. I got Peyton Manning, the record holder, for the career touchdown record.
Next game, you got Lions and Falcons. Falcons are horrible. I'm going Lions.
I guess I'll go with Lions. And oh, I'll just say that Golden Tate, if you got him, start him.
Bingo. Let's see. They don't have Cliff Avril. That's right. Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley versus an injured O-line. I've got the Lions next.
Yeah. Vikings versus the Bucks.
Good job.
Oh, man. This is... Bucks coming off a bye. You don't know what they're going to be doing, but I'm going to go with Vikings.
It'll be interesting to see how Teddy Bridgewater does. He's having trouble the past couple games, but I'll go with the Vikings.
Wow! If you got Cordarrelle Patterson, make sure you start him. He'll get at least 2 touchdowns. No, I got the Vikings. I just can't do it, Chris. Oh, by the way, the fact that Lovie Smith still has a job there right now amazes me. Continue.
Yeah, I get the Bills versus the Jets. The Bills have lost C.J. Spiller out for the year with an injury, and they also Fred Jackson's out for a month. So they're running games down. You got Kyle Orton at quarterback. Jets defense gave Tom Brady a little struggles there with all those 5-3 and outs. I'm gonna go with the Jets with this, also with the addition of Percy Harvin.
Weasel.
I'll go with the Jets.
Damn it. This is legitimately tough. I know you're worried about the run game, Chris, but Anthony Dixon is a good runner. I think he could still be a factor. And maybe if they were starting EJ Manuel, I would be inclined to pick the Bills. But I got a real problem picking a dude that was set in his previous portion of his career by a combination of Rex Grossman and then later on Tim Tebow. I got the damn Jets.
You got the Bears at the Patriots. I'm going Patriots on this. Bears are like a dumpster fire right now.
The game should be a shootout. It should. But I go with the Pats.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me, actually, if the Patriots tried to run the ball a little bit with Vereen instead of relying on 49-yard passes to him. Nonetheless, Brady and his boys win the day very easily. I, too, have the Patriots.
And then you got the Seahawks versus the Panthers. It's really tough. Two two defenses that are supposed to be good that haven't looked all that great the last 2 weeks. The Seahawks are losing. Don't have Bobby Wagner right now. Panthers may not be with Luke Kuechly either. Seahawks got to get back on track. I'm going with Seahawks on this, even though they are playing at the Panthers.
Yeah, can't trust how the Panthers offense is doing, so I'll go with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I got to go Seahawks here simply because there's too many questions. If indeed, like you said, Kuechly missing a game or whatever.
He might be with the ejection. They're trying to see what it is.
He shouldn't be, but if they're that stupid, that would put the nail in the coffin for me. It's a shame that all this is happening because this should be a good game, and I just don't think it'll end up being that way. I, too, have the Seahawks bouncing back to keep themselves from having a losing record. Chris.
Next, you got Dolphins at the Jags. This is another game. Dolphins played up to their competition the last 2 weeks. You know, blew the game against the Packers, but they always have a tendency to play down to their competition with the Jags. I'm going Dolphins.
Okay, I was about to say Weasel.
Yeah, I'll go with the Dolphins.
Of course, the Dolphins. Cameron Wake will be in Bortles' face the whole game.
Next, you got the Ravens at the Bengals. With A.J. Green, I think the Bengals, this is the second time these teams have played against each other. The Bengals won the first week, week one, 23-16. But without A.J. Green, I'm going Ravens.
Weasel.
Yeah, that offense for the Bengals, no. So I got the Ravens.
At least the past two victories, a key factor in the component for the Bengals was A.J. Green. He's not here. So, too, will Vontaze Burfict probably be missing. That means they're screwed on both sides of the ball. Maybe the Ravens will expose themselves to be a weaker team than even I think they are, but they're going to win this one. I got the Ravens.
Next, you got Texans at the Titans. I'm going with Texans with another J.J. Watt touchdown.
Texans, Titans. I got to pick something different. Titans.
Well, I'm going to get a game on Weasel, but it won't be a J.J. Watt touchdown. It'll be a Jadeveon Clowney touchdown off of a J.J. Watt tip. Chris.
You got the Rams at the Chiefs. Even though the Rams beat the Seahawks, they're going to go back. Yeah, we don't believe in the Chiefs either, but I'm going Chiefs right here because the Rams are going to be hungover from their victory yesterday.
Rams.
Damn it, Weasley. Yeah. You're stealing my thunder because the team I believe will be hungover going into this matchup will be the Chiefs. They had no reason to be beating the Chargers. That's why the Rams will beat them. They're gaining confidence, having beaten the world champs. They're going to come out and show Alex Smith what's what.
You got the Eagles versus the Cardinals. The Eagles coming off a bye. Cards can shut down the running game, so it depends on who LeSean McCoy has. Carson Palmer's been playing pretty well this year. I'm going to go Cards.
Weasel.
I go Eagles.
I, too, am going Cardinals because what you need to beat the Cardinals is a strong front. And despite the constant fact I mentioned the missing of the following, Darnell Dockett, Calais Campbell, Carlos Dansby, Darryl Washington, all of them eliminated from the defensive front, and yet they still dominate. It doesn't make any sense. But yet if you dominate up front, if you're able to get outside and stop the screen and have at least one good corner, a.k.a. Patrick Peterson, cover a major threat down the field, you have a shot. And as long as you don't turn the ball over, which on occasion Carson Palmer can do but hasn't done lately, I have the Cardinals winning this Bird Bowl.
And you got the Colts at the Steelers, the way the Colts have been playing, their defense. I got Colts.
Weasel.
I'll take the Colts.
Yeah, not even strong enough for the homer to pick it. You're damn right I have Andrew Luck.
You got the Raiders at the Browns.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going Browns. I know they struggled against the Jags, but it's the Raiders. I'm going Browns. No other reason why.
I'll go with the Browns, too.
You know, if the Raiders had something else in the running game other than Run DMC to go to, I might consider picking the Raiders. But then I remember, oh, wait, the Browns have a good cornerback core as well. I, too, have the Browns. Relax, Cleveland.
You got Packers at the Saints. This could be the end of the Saints for the year. I'm going Packers.
I go Packers. Their offense is clicking on all cylinders.
Chris, your analysis is a little bit wrong. It's not it could be. It will be. And my in-laws will catch all sorts of hell for it come Thanksgiving. I, too, have the pack.
Then you get the Skins versus the Cowboys. I can't go against the Cowboys right now the way they've been playing until they show their true colors of how what kind of team they are. I got Cowboys.
Cowboys.
In a Texas crazy game where Colt McCoy comes on the field to face the Dallas Cowboys, someone involving the state of Texas has to win, I guess. And it will continue to be the Dallas Cowboys. Chris.
And that's it. Monday night.
That's Monday night?
Yeah. Oh,
make sure that's a game you skip. I almost cursed there. That game's going to be so bad. Anyways, that will do it for us here tonight in overtime here on the Student of the Game. Man, this music is awesome. So, but you can always catch us Monday night, 7:30 to 8:30. Make sure next week you go to the website, ngscsports.com, to check us out on TalkShoe. The TalkShoe player is right there on the website. You see the red little box there? It says TalkShoe on it. You hit the play button. It's really that easy. I promise you. But anyways, until next time, my friends, class dismissed.